Huge cogs turn in a giant machine. Doors open to reveal the logo for Lionsgate. Then the words Twisted Pictures are covered in razor wire and a metal stake is driven into the space between the two words. British Sky Broadcasting presents Saw 5, starring Tobin Bell as John Kramer, Costas Mandylor as Mark Hoffman, and Scott Patterson as Peter Strahm. It's written by Patrick Melton and Marcus Dunstan and directed by David Hackle, voiced by Stephen O'Neill on behalf of MCS Agency. It's raining. There's a rusty yellow door upon which is a grubby sign. Trespassers will be prosecuted. Thin shafts of light shine through the drawn blinds of two windows at the side of a large, dingy room, which is dominated by a huge table like a butcher's slab. Unconscious and strapped to the table in a crucifix position is a man in his 30s with short dark hair and stubble. He's wearing jeans and is bare-chested, his skin covered in tattoos. The man wakes up. The lights come on in the room. The man struggles with his restraints, pinned against the table by his ankles and his neck. A homemade-looking ventriloquist puppet appears on a nearby TV with a white face, a spiral design on both cheeks, black hair and a red bow tie.
Hello, Seth. I want to play a game. Right now, you're feeling helpless. This is the same helplessness you bestowed onto others. But now, it's unto you. Some call this karma. I call it justice. Now you served 5 years of what should have been a life sentence for murder. A technicality gave you freedom, but it inhibited you from understanding the impact of taking a life. Today, I offer you true freedom. In 30 seconds, the pendulum will drop far enough to touch your body. Within 60 seconds, it will cut you in half. To avoid the pendulum, all you have to do is destroy the things that have killed your hands. You must insert your hands and push the buttons to start the devices before you. Your bones will be crushed to dust when you destroy the things that have taken life in order to save one Seth. Make your choice.
A clock starts counting down. A gigantic pendulum fitted with a V-shaped blade starts swinging above Seth's abdomen. Seth writhes on the table as the mighty axe swings above him.
Was it axe finish?
Gripped onto his neck restraint, the pendulum drops down closer to his belly. His hands find two vice-like contraptions on either side of the torture table. He uses his fingertips to push pressure switches between the jaws of the vices. He whips his hands out as the vices start closing on them.
Okay.
He again inserts his hands into the contraptions, and looking terrified, he presses the switches. Blood starts to squirt from his hands as the vices tighten. His fingers are crushed one by one, and after each there's an extra little spurt of blood. A cog stops and reverses direction, and the clamps open up. Seth pulls out his crushed and blood-soaked hands, but the restraints don't release. The pendulum drops lower, making its first incisions across his stomach. The blade is swinging lower still, exposing the man's guts. A bit of bowel is flung out and lands against some plastic sheeting.
Ah!
blade cuts further and further down into the man's stomach. He chokes and blood squirts out of his mouth. He looks round at a door with a grimy piece of frosted glass within it. There's a hole in the glass, and someone is watching him through it. Seth stares vacantly towards the door.
Is what I supposed to
do? A pile of guts splash onto the floor. Seth coughs up more blood, and the metal restraint around his neck opens. Seth arches his back and gives up his last breath. The pendulum swinging slowly comes to a stop. Elsewhere, FBI agent Strahm and Jeff Reinhardt are pointing their guns at each other in what appears to be a medical room.
Let me see your hands! Let me see your fucking hands!
Where is my daughter?
Strahm fires at Reinhardt and shoots him in the chest and stomach. Reinhardt drops to his knees and slumps forward. Strahm looks down at a headless figure on the floor. Amanda Young is face down in a pool of blood on the floor too. Strahm steps up to a hospital bed where Kramer is lying dead on his back, with a bandage around his head and his clothes and pillow stained with blood. The door swings shut behind Strahm. The lights go out too. Agent Strahm steps towards the steel door and kicks it several times. He opens up his phone. The screen says, no signal found. His white shirt and dark tie spattered with blood, Strahm holds a torch tightly against his gun and points both ahead of him. Glow-in-the-dark paint is shining around the edge of a concealed door in the wall. Strahm approaches it cautiously. He kicks open the door. Behind the door is a shadowy corridor which Strahm peeks into. Something is dangling by a cord in front of him. Strahm stuffs his gun into his belt and holding the torch, he darts into the corridor and pulls a little tape player down off a length of string.
Hello, Agent Strahm. If you're hearing this, then you've finally found what you've been looking for. But is the discovery of my body enough? Or will your insatiable hunger to uncover the truth push you deeper into the abyss? Heed my warning. Do not proceed. For this room can either be your sanctuary, or it can be your grave. The choice is yours.
He looks round at the dead body of Kramer.
Fuck you.
He tosses the little tape player down and again holding the torch against his gun, he advances hesitantly out into the corridor. Shining the torch ahead of him, he darts his head round a corner, then moves round it more decisively and advances further down the narrow passageway. Again, he glances round another corner. His torchlight shines against a glass panel in a door. Strahm shines his torch through the glass, then bursts into the room. He looks round the room slowly. Suddenly, he's attacked by a figure in a pig mask. He's stabbed between the shoulders and sinks to the floor. Strahm opens his eyes. His head is now encased in a glass box. He looks horrified and starts to feel around the edges of the box.
Hey! Help! Help!
Strahm is seated on an office chair under the box, which is attached by metal poles to the ceiling. He looks up at two long pipes sticking out of the top of the box, leading to two water barrels suspended above him. The FBI man feels his pockets, then sees his torch, phone and gun are lying on top of a nearby oil barrel. He tries to prise open the glass box, but it's too strongly built. A chain turns on two cogs, and water starts to drain out of the two barrels and down the pipes. Strahm watches as the water pours into the glass box. Panicking, he again tries to wrench himself free, but is unable to do so as the water rises to his chin. He lifts his head up but the water's now covering his mouth. He struggles again. The water has now risen above his nose, over his eyes, up to his hairline. The last of the water pours out of the barrel, and his head is now completely submerged. His cheeks puffed out, he's desperately trying to hold his breath. He starts to furiously feel around in his pockets and pulls out a ballpoint pen. He thrusts the pen into the base of his neck. He undoes the top of the pen and pulls out its insides, so there's now a plastic tube sticking out of the hole in his neck. Later, a police SWAT team is rushing up steps towards an abandoned meatpacking building. Detective Hoffman heads past them carrying a long-haired young girl. He moves down the steps and hands the girl to a waiting police officer.
Where's my dad?
It's gonna be okay.
It's my mom. It's my mom.
Hoffman! I got him. You hit a what? What the hell, man? What happened? Where's Rick?
I tried to help. He didn't make it. Nobody made it.
We got a live one!
Strahm is being wheeled towards a waiting ambulance on a stretcher. He has breathing apparatus attached to his neck. Dark-haired Hoffman, who has a streak of blood from his nose down to his chin, frowns as he watches the FBI man being loaded up into the back of the emergency vehicle. Meanwhile, an old lady's sitting in a waiting room reading a magazine called New Mercury. It features a photo of Jigsaw on the front saying, "Death of a Killer, the two sides of John Kramer." There's a photo of Jill Tuck, Kramer's wife, within the article. The woman glances over at Jill, who's sitting nearby in the waiting room. A dark-haired secretary picks up a phone at a desk in front of them.
Hello? Right away. Miss Tuck.
Have a seat.
Jill is petite with blonde hair tied back and wears a modest black jacket.
It's nice to meet you, Mr. Feldman. Why am I here?
I represent your ex-husband, John. In the event of his death, I was instructed to contact you. You can understand my surprise when I found out who he really was. John left something for you.
Silver-haired Mr. Feldman opens an envelope. He pulls a VHS tape out of it and puts it into a tape player underneath a TV beside them. Kramer appears on the screen. He's very pale and gaunt, has a receding hairline of white tufty hair, and appears to be sitting in the medical room in the meatpacking plant. Jill at first flinches and looks away, then turns back and watches him.
If you're watching this, Jill, I'm long gone from this world. You are my heart. You always have been. You always will be. I'm not going to try to explain my actions of late. Suffice it to say that I find it difficult to forgive myself for what happened at the clinic. I permitted, indeed encouraged, your decisions regarding the people there. I saw danger and I should have acted sooner. I'm leaving you a box today, and its contents are of grave importance. Even though you and I don't always see eye to eye on everything, I deeply believe in you, and I believe that you will know what to do with these materials.
Jill bites her lip and glances at the floor. Kramer leans forward as if switching off the camera. Mr. Feldman turns off the TV and stands up. He picks up a dark box and puts it into the middle of the table. He takes a step back and does up a button on his jacket. Jill stands and slowly runs her fingers along the top of the box. She reaches under the collar of her blouse and undoes a chain around her neck, which a silver key is hanging from. Feldman watches as Jill inserts the key into the box's keyhole. Jill fires a quick glance at the lawyer, then slowly lifts the lid of the box. She looks inside. Feldman's trying to sneak a look too. Jill looks a little shocked. Her expression hardens, and she shuts the box. Then at police headquarters...
I want to thank you all for coming here today. And I'd like to be the first to say that the Jigsaw murders are over. The officers who gave their lives are being honored here today. But today I'd like to offer a special honor to the detective who's been on this case right from the beginning, who proved through hard work and dedication that the people who died did not die in vain. Today we honor the newly promoted Detective Lieutenant Mark Hoffman.
Hoffman, wearing a somber tie and jacket, stands up and approaches the lectern. He poses for photos with senior policemen and is given a commemorative plaque.
Thank you. Thank you very much. throughout this ordeal, if we've learned anything, it's that human life is sacred. And we've learned that every day, life should be cherished. Justice is the backbone to every peaceful society. And I believe that true justice has been served.
Later, he enters his office carrying the plaque. He moves to a set of shelves and lingers in front of a framed photo of a smiling, dark-haired young woman. He looks at a press cutting on a notice board saying, "Jigsaw found dead," which features a photo of Hoffman rescuing the little girl. He tosses the plaque down on the desk. He pulls an envelope out from under his computer keyboard and takes a piece of paper out of it, upon which has been written, "I know who you are." Hoffman stares at it a moment, then folds up the paper, and tucking it into his jacket, he leaves the room and heads down a corridor. Then he's in the police department's storage room, which is crammed with files and boxes of evidence. He wanders along the shelves and stops in front of a specific box. He removes a couple of plastic bags from it and takes Strahm's mobile phone out of one of the bags. A uniformed policeman enters the room.
"Detective Hoffman, you're wanted at the hospital. It's about Agent Perez."
"Thank you."
Agent Strahm is sitting by an empty hospital bed.
"Hello, Agent Perez, and welcome to the world that you have long studied. Heed my warning, Agent Perez. Your next move is critical.
What is that?"
The face of the jigsaw puppet explodes into Perez's face. Wearing a light blue dressing gown, Strahm stares stony-faced at the bed in front of him. Hoffman comes round a corner in the hospital and pauses for a moment in front of a door. He opens the door and looks inside. He sees a large bloodstain on the pillow of the empty bed. He takes a step into the room and shuts the door.
"I'm truly sorry about Agent Perez."
Strahm nods but doesn't look at him.
"She said your name, you know. Last thing she said was Detective Hoffman. Why'd she say that? Why'd she say your name?"
"I don't know."
"No. How'd you walk out of that building?"
"How did you?"
"On a gurney with a fucking hole in my throat. Look at you. Couple of scratches and a story about how your arm straps broke. Jigsaw doesn't make mistakes."
"Is this you theorizing again? Because Jigsaw's dead."
"I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about you and your whole crooked department."
"My department's gone. They're all dead. There's no one left."
"Besides you."
"I've been chasing Jigsaw from the beginning. And I got him. So unless you've got something else to say, back the fuck off. Read the papers. I saved that little girl."
Hoffman leaves the room. Later, Erickson, in his 50s, with thinning blonde hair and a trim moustache, is heading along the hospital corridor. He steps into Strahm's room, the FBI man standing by his bed in his dressing gown.
"Sorry about Agent Perez. Shouldn't you be resting?"
"I'm fine, Erickson."
"No, you're not, Peter. That's why I put you on medical leave."
Erickson opens his briefcase and looks inside it.
"I was supposed to die in that trap."
"You never should have been there without backup."
"I want to talk to Jill Tuck one last time."
"You're no longer handling the case, Peter."
"What?"
"Read it."
Strahm unfolds the letter he's been handed.
"Over a dozen dead bodies were recovered at the scene, two of which were cops."
"Jigsaw's dead. How many lives did I inevitably save?"
"By endangering yourself and others. You're off the case."
"On whose orders?"
"Mine." "I'm sorry, Peter. It's over."
Strahm looks shocked as Erickson leaves. Hoffman comes down some steps into a dark underground room. He switches on a light and moves slowly and purposefully into the dingy space. He pulls a red silk cloth from off a detailed scale model of a row of rooms connected by archways. On a table beside it are 5 TV monitors showing flickering CCTV footage. On the wall behind the TVs are several photos, as well as scribbled notes and sketches. Hoffman bends down and peers at the first monitor, which shows a small underground room. On one side of the room are 5 open-fronted cages, in front of which 5 young people are lying unconscious. Britt is a slim young woman with dark hair, Charles is bald with glasses and a goatee, Luba is an attractive African-American woman, Malik looks like a wealthy college boy, and Ashley's blonde and pretty. Ashley wakens and sits up. She sees 5 glass boxes at the other side of the room, which each hold a key. Around the neck of each captive is a leather collar which is attached by a wire cable to a pulley system above them, and there's a huge V-shaped blade at shoulder height in the back of each cage, which Ashley looks up at in horror.
Oh my God.
The others start waking up too and appear equally terrified.
Oh, what is this?
Hey, don't move.
What did you do to me?
I didn't do anything.
Jigsaw. I knew this was gonna happen to me. This is what he does.
No, it's not Jigsaw. He's dead. Haven't you watched TV lately?
Yeah, well, whoever it is, they're watching us.
Luba points at a CCTV camera.
Make sure we follow the rules.
Which are what?
I wouldn't do that if I were you. Unless you want your head to pop off like a dandelion.
How do you know that?
Because I have eyes. One pull pin starts the timer for all of us. You wouldn't want to do that unless you know how it works now, would you?
You should have to freak me out, dude.
A TV screen flickers on and a ventriloquist puppet appears.
Hello and welcome. From birth, you've all been given the advantages of few others. Yet through poor moral decisions, you've used these advantages to selfishly further only yourselves at the expense of others. Well, today, this singular way of thinking will be put to the test. Today, 5 will become 1 with a common goal of survival. You are all connected. A cable runs through your collar devices. It can be pulled so tight that you will be decapitated on the mounted razors. The only way to remove the collar is with the keys from the glass boxes on the pedestals before you. However, if one of you moves to retrieve a key, the 60-second timer will begin for you all. In choosing how to react to this situation, your lifelong instincts will tell you to do one thing, but I implore you to do the opposite. Let the games begin.
A clock starts counting down from 15 minutes.
Somebody has to die.
No, it says, don't listen to your instincts. That means don't go for the keys.
Are you fucking nuts?
How are we supposed to live if we don't go for the keys?
Maybe it's testing our endurance.
We've got to move, babe. That timer's connected to those jars.
No, it didn't say anything about those jars. They could be nothing.
They're nail bombs. Homemade, probably C4.
How the fuck do you know that?
She's a fire inspector. She's seen all kinds of demented shit.
How do you know me?
Charles looks at Ashley blankly.
Hey man, she's asking you a question. How do you know her? How do you know her? Answer me!
Look, let's just keep our cool. Okay, we can figure this out.
We're all here for a reason. Okay, and we're all connected, as the message said.
Luba peers round at Britt.
What did you do?
You go first.
It said that we were all born with advantages, right? That means we're all for money.
Malik waves meekly.
I'm not.
And neither am I.
Okay, nice fucking try, Nancy Drew.
Well, then what does it mean?
We all did something wrong with an advantage we were given from birth. That doesn't have to mean money.
What are you not telling us? Huh? You know about her. What do you know about the rest of us? Would you fucking talk to me?
Relax.
I am fucking relaxed.
It's a game, Tweaker. Get it? The less you know about me, the better.
The reason why you fucked up your charmed existence is pretty obvious to everyone, isn't it?
Fuck you. Fuck you.
Been playing with matches again, have we?
Fuck off, you fucking clown!
Malik rushes towards the boxes. Charles yanks on the cable and Malik falls backwards. The pin is released and the timer starts. Keeping a grip on the wire cable, Charles hauls himself towards his glass box. As he does so, the pulley system prevents the others from moving, so they remain in front of their cages. Charles wraps his jacket round his hand as he smashes the glass box and retrieves the key. He staggers backwards. Luba hauls herself towards her box. She also uses her jacket to help her smash the glass case, and she gingerly takes the key within it. Britt rushes forwards, and Luba is pulled back. She reaches her glass box and uses her shoe to smash the glass before picking out the key. Malik now strides determinedly towards his box. He puts his foot through the glass. The little key lands on the floor behind the glass case, and he has to give a mighty yank on the cable to pull himself over the case and reach down to the floor to pick it up. There are 10 seconds to go. Charles, Luba, Malik and Britt all unlock their collars. Ashley is yanked backwards into the jaws of the razor blade. Her body slumps onto the floor, her head topples off the top of the guillotine and rolls into the middle of the room. Charles watches as a pool of blood grows around Ashley's head. The bolt to the door opens. The digital clock is still counting down.
Unless you want to be shredded when those nail bombs go off, I suggest we move on.
Charles and Luba leave the room. Malik is slumped against one of the smashed key boxes, staring at the decapitated corpse. He watches Britt, who's retrieving each of the keys from the collars. She uses her shoe to smash the box, which Ashley never reached, and she takes that key too.
What are you doing?
Being smart.
Britt glances at Ashley's body and leaves the room. Hoffman loads a holdall into the back of a car and opens his mobile phone.
Special Agent Strom's office.
This is Detective Hoffman. Is Agent Strom available?
He's not, but I can connect you to Special Agent Erickson. He's handling all inquiries.
Please.
He's now sitting in his car.
You've reached the voicemail box of Special Agent Erickson. Please leave a message.
This is Detective Hoffman. I needed to discuss something with Agent Strom, but I can't seem to track him down. Could you give me a call? It would be greatly appreciated.
Hoffman scribbles the name Erickson in capital letters into a notepad. Later, Agent Strom, dressed in a black leather jacket and jeans, moves briskly along a dark corridor in the FBI building. He steps up to a locked door and swipes his security card in front of it. With a quick glance round, he opens the door and enters a shadowy office. He approaches a desk and sits in front of a computer, switching on a desk light as he does so. He brings up a window on the PC saying, Criminal Database, and he enters the name Mark Hoffman. A caption flashes up in red letters, No criminal records found. Strom leans back in his seat and sighs. He gets up and enters an FBI storage room. He runs his finger along a shelf with files on it marked Probable Jigsaw Victims. He takes documents from the first file and studies a list of names.
There you are.
He takes out another file, then pulls out a whole box of files. He moves back into the office, and placing the paperwork on his desk, he sits down. He starts to type into his computer and brings up search results for Seth Baxter. He clicks on one and navigates to a newspaper site whose headline reads, Local woman brutally murdered in domestic dispute. Strom starts to read it, then brings up grisly photos of the murder scene, where a young woman is lying on her back on a bed, her head's hanging off the edge of it, and her throat's been slit. Strom looks at more crime scene photos, and then brings up a newspaper article with the headline, Detective's slain sister laid to rest, and there's a photo of Hoffman at the burial. Strom leans forwards and stares at the image. Open-mouthed and frowning at the screen, Strom brings up another article, Boyfriend Kills Detective's Sister. A different article's headline is, Jigsaw killer strikes again, local man Seth Baxter found dead. Strahm leans back in his chair, staring at the screen, looking stunned. Then he leaves the office and heads down the corridor. Erickson's coming out of his office.
Peter.
Strahm continues a few paces, then stops.
Callan, take this to analysis.
Right away, sir.
What are you doing here?
Just grabbing some stuff from the office. I'm taking your advice.
Taking some time off, huh?
Yeah, well, I have to heal up, you know. You know, I'll keep in touch. I'll see you around.
Strahm marches off, then he kicks open the door into his grimy room, the location of the pendulum killing. He shines a torch into the dark room, then switches on the lights. The room itself has cables coiled up on the wall, there are metal shelving units down one side. The thick wooden bench which Seth had been attached to is still there, but the pendulum isn't. Strahm stands beside the gruesome table and opens a police file containing photos of Seth's mutilated body. There's a flashback of the pendulum slicing through his guts. Strahm studies the photos, then turns and sees the little spy hole in the door at the side of the room. Strahm looks through the hole, then back towards the room. He slowly advances into a narrow corridor at the edge of the torture chamber. He looks through the spy hole back into the room and appears to be watching Seth on the slab. In flashback, Hoffman is peering through the hole. Then someone wearing black gloves is removing a jigsaw-shaped chunk of flesh from Seth's body. Hoffman, wearing a hooded raincoat, makes his way out of the warehouse and pulls the rusty door closed behind him. He locks the door, then looks round at the rain. Later, oriental-looking Detective Fisk stands in the doorway to Hoffman's office.
Hoffman, we've got another body. Looks like another jigsaw victim. You up for this?
Yeah.
Typical bio, murder convict, served 5 years, just released last month.
Fisk and Hoffman approach the bloody corpse.
I know him. His name's Seth Baxter. My sister's ex-boyfriend.
This is the guy that murdered your sister?
He was sentenced to 25 years. Better reduced to 5 on a technicality.
Well, then I'd say justice was served.
Fisk and Hoffman stare at the body. There's a close-up of the jigsaw piece-shaped wound. Later, still by the peephole, Strahm looks round and thinks.
You killed him. Made it look like a jigsaw trap. I got you.
The players in the latest deadly game enter another underground chamber.
Not yet!
Don't close the door. It'll set off the timer.
Do you know that for sure?
Educated guess. What we need to do is figure out who everyone is. All right, well, we know that the dead woman worked for the fire department.
Not anymore. She got canned a month ago.
How the fuck do you know that? You're responsible for this! She had her fucking head cut off! I'm closing the door! I'm gonna close the fucking
Just
door!
Be quiet! Please.
Charles retreats from Malik. Britt looks at Luba.
What's your story?
I work for the Department of City Planning.
Married? Kids?
No. And no. Your turn.
You're not gonna tell them about Daddy?
My dad is Richard Gibbs.
The owner of the Cougars?
He's been trying to build a new stadium for years. Little did he know, all he had to do is wait for his daughter to get a job in City Planning.
And you? What about you? What sort of shady shit have you been up to,
I'm a senior VP for a real estate development company.
So you're boring too,
The Marshford Group. Yeah, you can't get a permit in this town without going to the Department of City Planning, right?
No, you can't.
What about you?
No wife. No kids that I know of. No job.
Trust fund, baby. Anyone surprised?
So fucking sick of your self-righteousness, man.
It's your turn.
I'm an investigative journalist for The Herald.
The Herald? This is a massive accomplishment. You work for a gossip rag?
Bite your fucking tongue.
What the hell are in those jars?
Let's do this fucking thing before the bombs go off.
Charles moves to the door and it bolts shut. The nail bombs go off in the previous room, and the blast rocks the remaining group.
Hello, and welcome to the next lesson. These walls hold four chambers. These chambers offer safety. However, to access them, a key is needed. But only three of the keys will fit the locks. These keys are in the glass jars hanging from the ceiling. Move quickly, though, because when the clock ticks down, the explosives in the corners of the room will detonate. With only three points of safety, which of you will be the odd man out? Make your choice.
The timer starts counting down.
Fuck!
Malik uses a long pole to smash several of the jars above their heads.
Fuck, it's blank. I need shape.
Each padlock has a different shaped keyhole.
Get your hands off that, not going anywhere.
Charles beats Malik with his stick.
Get a clue, you fucking bitch. It's survival of the fittest.
The bald journalist smashes as many of the jars above him as he can. The group are showered with glassy shards and hunch over, shielding their faces. Britt bends down and picks up one of the keys, now on the floor.
Blank. Blank.
Charles continues to bash the remaining jars. Britt picks up another key. She holds up a key with a triangular-shaped end and looks for the corresponding padlock. Luba picks one up too. Malik is starting to come round. Britt has opened up one of the doors to the safety tunnels. Luba has a key with a square end. Malik reaches for another key, but Charles steps on his arm and takes it off him.
Better luck next time, rich boy.
Luba smashes Charles in the back of the head.
Survival of the fittest, my ass!
Charles is doubled over on the floor. Malik takes the key from beside him and hurries over to the remaining cell. Luba clambers for safety into hers. Malik opens the doors to his. Charles struggles to his feet.
Wait!
Later, Strahm is back in an office at the FBI building. Laid out in front of him on the desk are a dozen or so crime files. Each one says probable Jigsaw victim. Strahm opens Seth's file. There are more gruesome photos of the bloodstained body. In flashback, Hoffman and Fisk are heading down a corridor at the police department.
Is everything going all right with Detective Carey on the Seth Baxter case?
Yeah.
Good. Listen, you keep me posted.
Will do.
Good.
After Seth, you were involved in every investigation.
Hoffman's in his office doing paperwork. He opens a file. Within it, he finds an envelope with his name written on the front.
When did you first meet Jigsaw?
Hoffman pulls out a piece of paper which says, "I know who you are." The detective looks up anxiously and thinks. He folds the paper, puts it into his jacket pocket, and leaves the room. Then he opens the door of the entrance lobby to his apartments. The narrow room is modern, but a little grubby, with bare walls. Hoffman takes a couple of steps into the lobby, then takes out some keys to unlock his mailbox, which is already open. He lifts the flap and pulls out some junk mail, which he discards. The lift doors open nearby. Hoffman advances towards them and almost collides with a dark-haired teenager with heavy eye makeup who's coming round the corner. Hoffman watches her go, then he moves slowly towards the lift. There's a sign across it saying out of order. He presses the button of the other lift and stands in front of its doors. He suddenly becomes aware of a noise further down the passageway. He looks round and, taking his gun out of its holster, he takes slow, determined steps along the corridor. He opens a door and is faced by a barking Alsatian.
Not remark him! Asshole! Jesus Christ! Come on, Pee-wee! Come on! Come on, Pee-wee!
Shit. He's about to get into the lift, but an older woman is coming out of it.
Do you mind?
Hoffman enters the lift and speaks to Kramer, who's the only other person remaining inside it.
Going up?
Yes, thank you.
Hoffman presses a button and the doors shut. Kramer watches the policeman stand in front of him. Hoffman watches the little lights indicating the different floors, but the lift seems to be stuck on floor 6. Hoffman becomes aware of this and glances down at Kramer's gloved hand.
What floor are you going to?
Kramer barges Hoffman into the side of the lift and jabs a syringe into his neck. Hoffman struggles slightly, then as the sedative takes effect, his body goes limp.
I think we're both going to the same place.
Hoffman wakes up. His wrists are bound to the arms of the chair he's sitting in, and a shotgun is propped up against him, aimed at his neck. He's in some sort of workshop. Kramer's in front of him in a dark top, drinking tea from a little oriental bowl and holding a newspaper clipping. Hoffman just stares at him.
You know why you're here, don't you? They say imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. But I find it somewhat distasteful to be given credit for work that's not mine.
He holds up the clipping saying Jigsaw Killer responsible for pendulum murder.
Especially inferior work.
Kramer carefully puts the clipping down.
Like you, I know what it's like to lose family. I know what it's like not to be able to protect loved ones. It's a powerless feeling.
Hoffman's restraints are linked by string to the shotgun's trigger.
I wouldn't do that.
Kramer pulls a mirror in front of Hoffman so he can see the rifle strapped to his front.
Here, trigger. What do you see? Vengeance can change a person, make you into something you never thought you were capable of being. But unlike you, I've never killed anyone. I give people a chance.
You call this a chance?
We'll see. Our game's just begun.
Our game? You don't even know me.
No. I know you. I followed you as you've pursued me. I know you. I know about your sister. I know how you cared for her.
There's a flashback of Hoffman in a policeman's uniform being hugged by a dark-haired woman.
I know she was your only family.
Leave me alone!
A flashback of Hoffman being held back at the murder scene. He kneels in front of his dead sister, kissing her hand. Back in the workshop, Hoffman glares at Kramer.
You sit in bars until closing. You drink so you can sleep. You stagger to your car and then you start in all over again the next day.
Kramer shakes his head at Hoffman disparagingly.
And I discovered what you do for recreation.
A flashback of Hoffman staring through the peephole during the pendulum killing.
You can dispense justice and give people a chance to value their lives in the same moment. And by the way, the blade on your pendulum was inferior. If you want a true edge...
He picks up a cutthroat razor.
You have to use tempered steel. Tempering's better for the long haul. You in this for the long haul, detective?
I've been a cop for 20 years. Is that long enough for you?
Then you and I both know the statistics for repeat offenders in this city. 67.5% of criminals are back in prison within 3 years.
What do you want from me?
So you might look at what you did to Seth as a kind of public service.
She was my only family. He didn't deserve a chance. He was an animal.
Everybody deserves a chance.
You didn't see the blood. You didn't see what he fucking did to her.
Killing is distasteful. To me. There is a better, more efficient way.
Kramer places a chair beside Hoffman and sits down. He puts his finger on the trigger of the rifle propped up against the policeman.
What do you see?
Look!
What do you see?
Tell me what you want!
I want to know if you have what it takes to survive.
Hoffman looks furious and terrified as Kramer slowly squeezes the trigger. The muscles in Hoffman's neck and face strain, and he lifts his chin as Kramer presses further, then pulls the trigger completely.
Fuck you. Fuck you.
You see, it's a different method that I'm talking about. If a subject survives my method, he or she is instantly rehabilitated. Now, you want a chance? You want a chance? I'll give you a chance.
Kramer gets up and, holding the razor blade, he stares into the mirror and addresses the policeman.
I am the man you call Jake Saul. It's your duty to bring me in. But I know who you are, and I know what you've done.
He now turns and speaks to Hoffman directly.
So this is blackmail?
No. This is redemption.
Kramer slices through the restraining strings on Hoffman's chair.
Just giving you an option, that's all. Now you can arrest me, but doing so, your life ends as you know it. Or you could explore a method of rehabilitation that'll permit you to sleep at night.
Kramer undoes the leather straps around Hoffman's wrists and pulls the shotgun off him. Hoffman thinks for a moment. He looks at the cutthroat razor on a nearby little table. Kramer sits down next to him.
Or I could kill you right now.
But you're not a true killer. That's your dilemma. And the information that I have on you is exactly where it needs to be. And it will be released in the event of my disappearance.
They'll never believe your word over mine.
Hoffman picks up the razor and gets up.
You're willing to take that risk? Risk of ruining your own life in order to protect a corrupt legal system that puts murderers back on the streets?
Kramer opens up the shotgun and reveals that there's still a cartridge in one of its barrels.
How'd your sister feel? You're at a crossroads, detective. Make your choice.
Hoffman, staring into space, thinking hard. He slowly pushes the razor back into its handle and appears to be lost in dark, troubling thoughts. Strahm is still in his office, hunched over the row of FBI case files. He opens another file and looks down at a list of names.
Did you help Jigsaw get all of them?
Strahm thinks for a moment, then picks up another handful of files which he removes an elastic band from. He opens one up marked secret. He looks at black and white photos of a bald man impaled on razor wire. He marches out of his office. Erickson is still in his office and notices Strahm go past. The FBI boss strides into the corridor with a quizzical expression. He stops for a moment, looking round and thinking, then moves past a cleaner and enters Strahm's office. He stands in the middle of the dark room for a moment, then approaches Strahm's desk. He glances down at a file. Hoffman is in his car with his mobile phone pressed to his ear.
Detective Hoffman, this is Special Agent Erickson.
You had something you needed to discuss about the Jigsaw case?
Yes, I stopped by Agent Strahm's room tonight at the hospital, but he wasn't there.
I hope he's all right.
Oh yeah, he's fine.
Agent Strahm was theorizing about the possibility of an additional accomplice to Jigsaw, other than Amanda Young. Someone who might be currently unknown. Did he ever mention anything like that to you?
No, but then again, I'm new to the case.
Yeah, well,
maybe you can get him to contact me at his earliest convenience.
I will do, and in your theorizing, who exactly did you suspect would be an accomplice?
He suspected someone on the inside.
Someone with access.
It's an interesting theory. Detective, what do you say we reconnect in the morning?
You got it.
Erickson enters the FBI storage room. He moves into an alcove and looks at a set of box files relating to the Jigsaw case, which are all empty. Erickson picks one out and glances inside it for good measure. Meanwhile, there are various bits of Charles's body lying on the floor of the grisly chamber. Britt kicks her way out of her little cell, as does Luba, and they start to emerge into the smoky room. They both hold their stomachs as they look down at Charles's dismembered corpse.
Dad,
That guy was an asshole, but he was smart. We could have used him.
Yeah, well, someone had to die.
Would you rather have been you?
Malik has crawled out of his cell. He glances at the others nervously, his hand covering his mouth. He rushes out of the room. Grit and Luba exchange concerned glances. Luba picks up one of the metal poles from off the floor. Again holding his torch tightly against his gun, Strahm comes down some steps into a dark basement room, the scene of one of Jigsaw's previous deadly games. Strahm removes his shoulder bag and looks open-mouthed at the large razor wire cage in the center of the room. Strahm shines his torch into the cage, then takes the relevant case file out of his bag and opens it up, revealing more gruesome crime scene photos.
How'd they get you?
In flashback, it's nighttime in a quiet backstreet downtown. A large balding man is sitting in his car. He drinks copiously from a bottle of bourbon, then smashes it against his steering wheel. Frowning and in some distress, the man bashes his head against the steering wheel too. He holds a large shard of glass against his wrist. The back end of his car is violently jolted. The man looks round. He gets out of the car and moves round to the boot, but there doesn't seem to be anyone there. Suddenly, a figure in a pig mask grabs his throat. The big guy hurls his attacker over the car bonnet. Another pig-masked attacker tries to garrote him. Again, the balding man throws him off, then picks him up and smashes him backwards into a steel wall. The victim has his attacker by the throat, but he's stabbed in the back by the other assailant. The big man swings round and points his finger to him.
I'm gonna kill you!
He struggles with his attacker against the side of the car, then drops down woozily in a heap on the ground. The man seems to have passed out. The two assailants remove their masks. Kramer has a shaven head and goatee beard. Hoffman, the other attacker, looks troubled. Strahm continues his investigation of the crime scene. He moves around the cage, shining his torch at it. His attention is drawn to another spy hole in a wooden door, which he bends down to thoughtfully. He looks towards the stairs, from where in flashback, shaven-headed Kramer now enters the basement room. He switches on the red LED timer and stares coldly into the cage.
Hello, Paul. Did you cut yourself because you truly wanted to die, or did you just want some attention? Tonight, you'll show me. If you want to live, you'll have to cut yourself again. How much blood will you shed to stay alive, Paul?
Agent Strahm shines his torch through the chicken wire. In flashback, Paul is on all fours inside the cage. Grim-faced, Strahm turns and steps towards the wooden door and opens it into a little side room, which he enters. The room's dark. His torchlight falls on a little metal box on a wall, a cheap shelving unit, an oil drum in the corner. He sees the hole in the door, then switches on a small worker's lamp beside a fuse box. He puts his bag down on a little table, then switches on a desk lamp next to it and unzips his bag. He looks back at the door. In flashback, shaven-headed Kramer is sitting at the door, peering through its hole.
I didn't expect to feel any remorse.
The heart cannot be involved. Emotionally, there can be nothing there. It can never be personal.
Let's go.
No. You're not done yet. Tonight, you will see the difference between killing and rehabilitation.
Kramer gently guides Hoffman to sit in the seat by the door. Hoffman looks through the hole, then looks down at the floor.
There is another detective that you should be aware of. His name's Tapp. He's smart and he's getting closer.
I know who he is.
Kramer casually leans against the wall beside the cop.
I need you to lead him to someone for me. A doctor. A healer who needs some healing.
He puts down a white pen in a little plastic bag. In flashback...
This is yours, Doctor.
Detective Tapp puts the pen down on the doctor's desk. In the little side room, Agent Strahm opens up a file filled with police mugshots.
You supplied these police files, didn't you?
In flashback, Hoffman is dragging one of Jigsaw's unconscious victims into the house that will become the location for one of his earlier games. Kramer watches sitting on the floor at the side of the bare room. There are other people also out cold already scattered around on the floor. Hoffman points his gun at them. Kramer is now by the door adjusting a mechanical device he's fixed to the back of the door.
You're assuming this is going to play out the way you want it?
I assume nothing.
He places Hoffman's gun into the device so that it's aiming at the door's spy hole.
I anticipate the possibilities and I let the game play out.
Then why do you need Amanda in the game?
Hoffman goes round to the other side of the door.
To ensure that the rules are followed. She won't make decisions for anyone. She'll just offer choices.
He's looking through the spy hole.
A little to your left.
He turns a key in the door. The cog below the gun contraption flicks the trigger.
That leaves a lot to chance.
Kramer hands Hoffman a bullet, which the cop loads the gun with. Kramer takes a little tape player from Hoffman and kneels in front of a bricked-up fireplace within which there's a gap in the brickwork.
If you're good at anticipating the human mind...
He carefully places the tape player into a little cubbyhole behind the missing brick.
It leaves nothing to chance.
Kramer puts a brick into the space and seals the little cubbyhole. Hoffman finishes loading the gun. Kramer stands and surveys the bodies around him with the merest hint of a smile.
Stop.
Kramer moves slowly and purposefully back through the room. Then, as he leaves, he closes the door behind him. Malik enters another underground chamber, in the middle of which is a bathtub.
Jesus Christ.
At the end of the room is another digital timer. Britt and Luba slowly enter.
Great. More bombs.
And there's a TV monitor at the side of the room.
All right, what'd you do to get here?
I did something, and a bunch of people were killed. I didn't mean to. They're still dead,
That's why you're here?
Yeah.
Shouldn't you have gone to jail for something like that?
Nobody else knows.
Luba shakes her head in disgust. Britt looks up at a CCTV camera.
Somebody does.
Malik touches his temple nervously and nods his head. Luba paces around, stroking her chin. She looks round at Britt, who's glaring at her, arms folded.
I didn't kill anybody, if that's what you're asking.
I wasn't.
I grant building permits. And yeah, some people might have been more deserving than others, but you know what? That's the business. So if someone tells you different, well, then they're just stupid. Or naive. Or both.
Bullshit. You take bribes, you're a fucking liar, you cheat people, that's not nice.
Yeah, well, I'm sure she's not exactly Mother Teresa either.
No, I'm not. I build condos in one of the most densely populated cities in the country. You don't put up a new building without tearing down a few old ones.
So we're all bags of shit that deserve to be here, that's good. That's great. Fucking great.
So is that what you think this is? You don't think there's any other connection?
No, I do. I do. And I don't give a shit. Close the fucking door. We have to hear the rules.
His hands clasped around his elbows submissively, Malik sits in front of the bath while Britt shuts the door and it automatically bolts itself. The Jigsaw puppet appears on the screen.
Hello and welcome. You must all be eager to learn the next important lesson in your transformation. The game before you is designed to bridge the gap between you all. In order to open the five locks on the door out of this room, the five electrical circuits powering them must be closed. The only way to do this is to find a way to connect all five cords to the bathwater. Close the circuits, and the door will open. But you must work quickly, for in 3 minutes, an electrical current will surge through this room, locking the door forever. Who will bridge the gap? The choice is yours.
A sign says, danger, high voltage.
Jesus Christ.
Malik picks up one of the clips, but its cable won't stretch to the bath.
It's not gonna reach. How the fuck are we gonna do this? Come on!
You're gonna get in the tub. And we're gonna connect the five cords to you.
But you're gonna kill me too?
Get in.
Yeah, I'm more of a shower guy. I don't think I'm gonna do that right now.
Get in the fucking tub!
Fuck you, you bitch! You get in the fucking tub!
Luba bashes Malik with the pole.
No, don't do it! Please, no!
Britt sticks a spike into the back of Luba's neck. Blood spurts out of the wound. Luba looks shocked and slumps to the floor. Britt stares down at her coldly.
You killed her. You fucking killed her.
I didn't trust her.
Jesus Christ, what is it with you two?
Just shut up and help me with the body.
Malik hurriedly takes off his jacket. The timer's at 1:57. Malik lifts Luba by her shoulders and Britt lifts her by her ankles. They drop her into the brown bathwater. Britt positions Luba's feet so they're hanging over the side of the bath. Malik is about to put one of the electric clamps to Luba's hand.
Wait, don't let your body touch hers.
Malik touches the clamp to Luba's wrist. The needle on an electrical gauge rises. The bolt on the door opens, then closes. Malik attaches the clamp to the dead girl's finger. Luba starts shaking. Britt attaches her clamp to Luba's foot. The needle on the gauge rises further. Malik attaches another clamp to Luba's other hand. Britt picks up the spike which she used to kill Luba. Malik slowly lifts the remaining conductor off the floor and stares at it.
Oh God, it's a hook.
Britt hurls her spike into the dead girl's foot.
Stick it in her head or we don't get out!
Britt raises her arms to protect herself from flying sparks.
Do it!
He sticks the hook into the back of Luba's head. The gauge reaches 100 milliamps, the final bolt retracts and the door opens. Britt moves to the door and leaves. As the room is filled with more sparks and smoke, Malik rushes cowering from the room too. Erickson is sitting at his desk in his dimly lit office working at his laptop.
Come in.
Sir, Miss Jill Tuck.
Good evening. Special Agent Erickson.
Thank you for seeing me so late in the day.
Not a problem. That'll be all.
Thank you.
Please, have a seat.
So, what do you need from us?
I think I'm being followed.
Well, that sounds more like police work, Miss Tuck.
I don't think they can help me.
Because?
Because it's you, the FBI.
I don't understand.
It started when John was first identified as a Jigsaw killer. It didn't surprise me then, but I'm still being followed.
By who, Miss Tuck? Who would be following you?
I think it's the agent who interrogated me.
Agent Strong?
Jill nods.
And why would he be following you?
I don't know.
Erickson looks at his desk and frowns.
Who else have you told about this?
Only you.
Agent Strahm is back in Kramer's medical room. There are still large bloodstains on the floor, but the bodies have all been removed. Strahm leans against the hospital bed and thinks. In flashback, Kramer is now lying on his side on the bed, holding an oxygen mask over his mouth. Hoffman standing facing him.
What's going on with Amanda? Didn't you tell me the only way to truly offer enlightenment is by detaching emotionally?
But you can have something Amanda doesn't.
Anonymity.
That's the greatest protection. That's what I've given you.
I need you to set up a game.
It may not be entirely clear to you right now, but I assure you that the people being tested are part of something much larger. They're connected. So in the end, all the pieces will fit together.
and it'll be clear.
Amanda, we'll fail you.
We'll see.
Kramer slowly picks up a brown phial beside him on the bed and passes it to Hoffman.
What's this?
It's time to play a game.
Help! Help! Help me! What is this? What is this? What is this place? What is this place?
Hoffman leaves the medical room through the hidden door in the wall. Dark-haired Lynn is pushed into the room on a wheelchair by Amanda Young. Kramer slowly takes off his oxygen mask and looks at the terrified woman impassively. In the corridor behind the room, Hoffman flicks through the file of photos of Charles, Luba, and Britt. With a stern expression, he heads off down the dark passageway. Strahm is still leaning on the empty hospital bed.
We're all supposed to die.
There are more grisly flashbacks.
It's not fucking death in you!
Where is my daughter?
He didn't make it. Nobody made it.
You were supposed to be the hero.
A flashback of Hoffman passing Reinhardt's daughter to a policeman. Strahm's fists clench against the hospital bed and he pushes it over. He stands in a rage, staring at the floor. Then Erickson is moving towards his car in the FBI car park. Hoffman watches him from his car and takes Strahm's mobile phone out of the little evidence bag. He opens it up and presses a button on it. In his car, Erickson looks at his phone and sees Peter Strahm's name flashing up on it.
Peter, where the hell are you?
But Hoffman folds up the Strahm phone.
Hello?
Erickson rings the phone back. Hoffman coolly switches Strahm's phone off.
You've reached the voicemail for Special Agent Peter Strahm. Leave a message.
Cowan. I want to put a locator on Strahm's mobile phone.
Right away, sir.
Call me right back.
Right. Hoffman has written something in his notebook. He watches as Erickson moves off in his car. Erickson's PA is at her computer screen. A window on the screen says things like, locating cell phone, Special Agent Peter Strahm. A message flashes up saying, no signal found. Carrying a cup of coffee, Hoffman re-enters the control room for the latest of Jigsaw's deadly games. He stands in front of the row of computer monitors and puts the coffee down. He pulls Strahm's mobile phone out of his coat and switches it on. He folds up the phone and puts it on the table next to the screens. Pinned to the wall in front of him are the black and white photos of the game's protagonists, and underneath them are various notes. Without emotion, Hoffman looks at the screens, then leaves. Malik and Britt enter a new room, in the middle of which is a long rectangular glass-topped box. At waist height, there are five holes in a row along the side of the box.
What the hell is that?
It's our next nightmare.
Malik peers into one of the holes and sees a circular saw located within it.
There are blades in here.
The box is mounted on a cage containing a large glass jar.
It's connected to the door. When the beaker fills up, the door opens.
Fills with what?
Blood. Our blood. I think an arm is supposed to go in there to fill the beaker.
Wait, why can't we just use the water from the other room?
No, the slots are closed. We have to stick our arm in to keep them open, but then they get stuck. We need to close that door.
So what? If I do the death in the, the winner gets to feed him with the other person's blood?
Britt swallows hard. Malik shakes his head.
Wait. Do you still have the keys from that first room?
Yeah.
Try one of them on that door.
It won't work.
No, it might. This one has a keyhole.
Britt hurries over to the door and tries the keys in the lock.
It's not even the same lock.
Why are there five slots in this machine? Shouldn't there only be one?
Britt crouches beside the door and looks at the various keys in her hand.
They all would have worked.
Hoffman heads out of the police headquarters. Strahm is watching him from his car. Hoffman gets into a blue car parked nearby. Strahm watches as the detective drives away. The FBI agent heads off too. Erickson's PA is still working at her computer. An aerial view of the city is shown and a message comes up. Location lock, 1293 Sandburst Drive.
There you are, Strahm.
All right, I got it.
Britt and Malik re-enter the bathtub room, which is full of smoke. Malik puts his hand to his face.
I don't think this is a good idea.
The tub wasn't meant for one person. We were supposed to hold one cable each and suffer a small shock. It was meant for five people. They all were every game. We only needed one key in the first room. They all worked and any one of them would have opened every collar. In the second room, the three tubes were large enough for more than one person. We were supposed to work together, so we all survived. That's the game.
Your lifelong instincts would lead you to one thing, but I implore you to do the opposite.
Big fucking whoops.
She pulls him out of the room. They re-enter the room for their final challenge. The door locks, and there's an explosion behind it, sending clouds of smoke into the room. A TV in the corner flickers on, and the jigsaw puppet appears.
Hello and welcome. This journey has been one of discovery, and hopefully you've discovered the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. The human body, for instance, is an astoundingly durable creation. It contains approximately 10 pints of blood, yet it is still able to operate with just half of that. The device before you is one of sacrifice, a sacrifice of blood. In order to open the door, the beaker must be filled to the marked level, a level that is of no coincidence. This amount can come from any one of you. That does not matter. What does matter is time. For in 15 minutes, if the beaker is not filled, the bombs will explode and the doors will be sealed forever. So now I ask you, how much blood will you give in order to survive?
The chainsaws start spinning and Malik flinches.
Fuck! Alright, so one person can fill the beaker with 10 pints of blood and die. Or two people can fill it with 5 pints. Maybe live. What are we gonna do?
Hoffman's car pulls up in a dark alleyway at the side of a house. Hoffman gets out of the car, shuts the door, and with a quick glance around, he heads up some steps towards the building. Strahm slows to a stop in his car and watches as Hoffman enters the house and switches on the light. Strahm gets out of his car. In the underground chamber, the clock says 10 minutes, 35 seconds. Britt's tying a tourniquet around Malik's bicep.
I lied. I know the investigative journalist in there. His name is Charles. He was writing a story about what I did.
What'd you do?
A dealer gave me an ounce of heroin to burn down an abandoned building. But it was... oh, God, it wasn't abandoned. There was 8 people in there. 8 people died. And the feds got involved. And I got caught, but I made a deal and my dad got me off. But the guy who hired me disappeared and nothing happened. Nothing happened.
Gun raised, Agent Strahm pushes open the front door of the Hoffman house and enters. He moves cautiously past a staircase and round the corner into a shadowy corridor. He kicks open a door into a living room, keeping his gun pointed ahead of him. The room is rather untidy, but modern and well furnished. He steps up to a trap door concealed in the wooden floor. He pulls open the door and heads down a flight of steps into a dark basement. In the torture chamber...
That's how she knew me. The woman in the tub. Fire! That's what connects us. The fire inspector who wrote the bogus accident report. The city planner who pushed through the residential permits, the journalist that buried the investigative story, the rich kid junkie who was the patsy, and the real estate developer who set it all in motion. We killed 8 people and stole a property and nobody cared.
Nobody cared? 8 people and their families cared? The feds cared? Look at my fucking arm! I cared! I cared!
But you didn't face justice. None of us did.
Well, why did they all do it? Why, was it for money? This was your plan? You were the one behind it? There was 8 people still living in that building. You had to know that. Did you know that? You're a monster.
Britt's expression hardens. Malik shakes his head.
So are you.
We both deserve to be here.
Britt starts to tie the tourniquet around her bicep. The couple glance at each other with resolve. They approach the long box and peer down at it. Erickson pulls up outside an industrial-looking building. Strahm is still moving around the basement with his torch. Erickson enters the building. He stops and takes out his torch. He shines it on some shelves cluttered with old electrical equipment and a model skull with wires sticking out of the top of it. Strahm emerges round another corner in the gloomy basement. There's a long streak of blood on the floor ahead of him. In the underground chamber...
I can't do this alone!
Erickson rushes down some steps. Agent Strahm proceeds cautiously through an open steel door. He moves round another corner and, still with his gun raised, he kicks open another door. Erickson enters a storage room. There are hooks and bits of metal on the table. Malik's looking down at the spinning saw in the box.
We have to go on 3!
Agent Strahm steps cautiously over a grill in the floor. In the torture room, Malik has one of his fists poised at the hole in the side of the glass box. He's grimacing and his arm is trembling. Strahm comes round another dark corner. He shines his torch down the narrow passageway and makes his way slowly along it.
Cool!
Malik puts his hand into the hole. His fingers approach the spinning blade.
Put your hand in the hole!
Britt puts her hand in the hole in front of her too. Strahm is now standing at the doorway to a small room in the middle of which is a glass coffin. Circular saw touches flesh in the gap between middle finger and ring finger. The glass top of the rectangular box is spattered with blood. Strahm has entered the boxy room. A metal grill covers the top of it. 2 pipes are sticking through the grill and into the side of the long glass box, which is propped up almost vertical, and there's a little tape player resting on the broken glass inside it. Malik and Britt continue to saw into their hands. The jar is now almost half full of dark red blood. They've now sawn just beyond their knuckles. Malik throws his head back in agony. The jar reaches 6 pints. The countdown clock is approaching 2 minutes. Malik looks pale and drowsy. He's almost sawn through the whole of his hand. The jar now holds 8 pints of blood. The saw is cut past his wrist. Malik drops to his knees. He tries to get up and peers at the jar of blood. Agent Strahm slowly reaches into the glass box and picks the tape player off the top of the shards. He glances upwards, steps back, and presses play.
Hello, Agent Strahm. If you are hearing this, then you have once again found what you are looking for. Or so you think. Your dedication is to be commended. But I ask you if you have learned anything on your journey of discovery. As the old adage goes, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. The situation you find yourself in is one of trust. So I ask you, Special Agent Strahm, have you learned to trust me? The only way to survive this room is by entering the glass box before you. Pain will be incurred, but you have a chance of survival.
Hoffman, gun raised, is moving through the basement corridor. Strahm spins round nervously. Erickson heads along another dark passageway. He pulls out his gun as he approaches a metal door, which he yanks open. In the underground chamber, the measuring jar is now full of blood, and a counterweight moves within the contraption. Britt and Malik flop onto the floor. The bolt opens on the door. Malik lifts his head up.
I did it. I won.
Malik lifts his arm. It's been cut down the middle, almost to the elbow. Erickson comes down some steps and now enters the control room for Hoffman's deadly game. He sees the model of the torture rooms and the banks of CCTV monitors. Hoffman emerges out of the shadows, creeping along a murky passageway, still with his gun raised. He pauses beside an open door and peers into the small room housing the glass coffin. No one's there. He looks upwards and is now standing in the doorway. He drops his guard and takes a couple of steps into the room. Erickson looks down at the detailed scale model of the torture rooms and now stands in front of the bank of monitors. He looks round a moment, thinking to himself. There's a cup of coffee still steaming on the table. He stares at the photos of the young victims on the wall. Meanwhile, Hoffman crouches and picks the little tape player off the floor. Reflected in the glass case in front of him, he sees Strahm is standing behind him with his gun aimed at his head. Hoffman spins round and knocks the gun out of Strahm's hand. They exchange several bone-crunching punches. Strahm thumps Hoffman in the side, then headbutts him on the nose and pushes him back into the coffin-shaped box. Hoffman tries to get out, but Strahm punches him in the face again and slams the lid of the case shut. The FBI agent grins wildly at his quarry.
I got you, you motherfucker.
Meanwhile, Erickson's still staring at the CCTV monitors. He swings round and points his gun in the direction of the groan. He takes a few cautious steps round a corner where there's an open door beyond which Malik is unconscious on the floor. Britt suddenly appears from behind a table wielding a spike.
Drop it! I said drop it!
Britt flops forwards. Erickson crouches down and supports her head.
Who did this to you? Who did this to you?
She starts to pass out. Erickson lays her on the floor and reaches into his pocket for his mobile phone.
I need immediate medical assistance. 1293 Sandburst Drive.
Meanwhile, still locked in the glass case, Hoffman is snarling at Strahm. The room's steel door swings shut. Strahm tries to pull it open. In Hoffman's control room, Erickson is again standing at the CCTV monitors. He opens an FBI file and pulls out photos of Luba, Malik, and Britt. He flips up his mobile phone and presses it. The screen says, calling Peter Strahm. Erickson looks round. Strahm's phone is ringing on the table in front of him. Erickson grabs it and opens it up. He looks shocked and shakes his head.
Jesus, Peter.
He picks up and opens another secret file and is confronted by two photos of himself. Strahm, still trying to get out of the cell-like room, he lunges at the glass case.
Tell me how to open it! How do I open it?
But Hoffman just stares back at him impassively and gestures at the little tape player on the floor, which Strahm picks up.
However, if you choose not to, you will never be heard from again. Your body will never be found. You will simply vanish. I ask you, Special Agent Strahm, have you learned enough to trust me? Will you heed my warning? For if you do not...
Fuck you.
This room will forever be your tomb, and my legacy will become yours.
If you're good at anticipating the human mind...
I think I'm being followed.
Who would be following you?
I want to talk to Jill Tuck one last time.
He suspected someone on the inside.
It leaves nothing to chance.
We were all supposed to die.
You were supposed to be the hero.
Make your choice.
The walls of Strahm's cell start closing in.
Coward.
This is Erickson. I want you to put out an APB. Suspect's name is Peter Strom. Yeah, that's right. Special Agent Peter Strom.
The glass case containing Hoffman starts to lower slowly into the floor. Strom pulls at it and tries desperately to pry it open. He picks his gun up off the floor in the corner, then points it at the box and fires at its locks, but nothing happens. He uses his foot to try and lever its lid open. He's now standing on top of the see-through coffin.
Come out of stomach, you son of a bitch!
He fires directly at the top of the glass.
I know who you are! I know!
Strom rushes over to one of the incoming walls and presses against it. The glass case is now lowered completely into the floor. The walls of the cell are getting closer and closer. Strom rolls up his sleeves and presses one side of the walls, putting his feet up against the other. The gap is narrowing all the time. He climbs up the wall, but the metal grill is preventing his escape. Hoffman is smiling darkly from his vantage point below. The bone in Strom's lower arm snaps and rips through his flesh as the walls close in. Hoffman's glass case is showered in blood as the walls finally come together above him. The end.